Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I have a very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, everybody. Tim Kawakami here. 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host. It's Matt Barros, recording this Sunday night, hours after the 49ers' best win of the season. I think we can say that, Barros, at least their best game of the season.
There's the big Bears asterisk to this whole thing. But even though it was the Bears, it was still a dominant performance by the 49ers.
It was crisp. It was a 24-0 at halftime. You know, what was outgaining him 319-2. A stat, I guess, that Kyle Shanahan mentioned to the team after the game to talk about how dominant they were, like some record number, maybe, you know, the most differential or something at halftime, whatever it was. 38-13 victory. Second half was uneventful. 49ers kind of looked a little wobbly, but then came right back and they could just keep scoring forever. Barros, what's your one-liner, two-liner summation of what this means, what this showed us about the 49ers?
Yeah, well, what I wrote about is that they finally found that desperation that we've been looking for all these weeks, and it totally worked. But the question now is whether they discovered it too late, because the Seahawks also won their at least two games ahead of the 49ers at this point. So is it too little too late? It was interesting that, you know, we've been kind of searching for the 2023 49ers to show up this whole season. And here we are. What's the date? December 8th? Yeah, it's December 8th. No, finally, they showed up. The late arriving.
Dramatic, talented. Dramatic entrance. You can't do it when everybody expects you. I think it is too late. But, you know, better late, I guess, than never. You know, I was really intrigued, I think, as many of us were, when Shanahan kind of referenced it. I did ask him, I kind of lucked into that, about new leaders emerging. Because, you know, you've kind of hit this. Like, their captains, you know, half their captains are not playing. Bosa and McCaffrey and Trent Williams. And they've been out so many other people. And, like, this is time for – and I was thinking, like, maybe you need some younger veterans to become leaders. I just kind of stumbled. I don't know if I was thinking this. And he talked about it. You know, they've been wanting this all year. They've got guys playing, You know, younger guys who you really didn't expect to play this season are playing because of injury, and they need some people to kind of, you know, move into other kinds of leadership positions. You prove it on the field. You prove it by what you've done. Other players look to you. And who does Kyle Shanahan ask to speak to the team last night? As everyone mentioned, they didn't, you know, it was kind of volunteered. D'Amador Lenore and Brock Purdy. 25-year-old Lenore, 24-year-old Purdy. These are not 30-year-olds. These are not, you know, just guys who put in year after year after year. I think Lenore is the perfect example of that, right? A guy who's played his way, not through injury, but just played his way into a preeminent role on this team, got an extension. He's going to be on this team for many years to come. He's just a perfect kind of like upward trajectory guy that you would pick to be the leader, kind of the next generation. So these guys aren't Dominic Pooney, Renardo Green, and some of the other guys who've kind of jumped into positions because of injury. They're not those guys. They're not Isaac Arendo, but they're kind of the chaperones, right? They're the liaisons between the older top group, which we've talked about, and this young group that's kind of emerging, and they're going to desperately need the rest of this way. But most importantly, I think, for 2025, to give them a sense of themselves as they go into the offseason and not kind of be empty and bereft of who are we, reinstate who you are to these young guys, and then move to 2025.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a move that Shanahan had to make because, you know, most of the time it's Fred Warner trying to rally the team, talking to the team, doing all the things that he does so well. And I give him a ton of credit for this, but it's obviously not worked, you know, and Warner hasn't been quite himself. But they needed to do something different. They needed to do something to kind of shake things up and get that message through somehow, because it's been falling on deaf ears to this point. And yeah, I thought it was interesting that it was Lenore, Purdy, as you noted, two guys who are prominent on the team, but not prominent talkers.
That's another great point.
When it comes to talking to the team. Now, Lenore is a world-class talker on the field, but not to the group. The other guy who spoke was George Kittle, who is a very good talker and thinks very kind of deeply about big themes and the letters that his dad writes to him before every game, which kind of talk about these things, are well documented. But he's somebody that thinks about it and can express it. And I think that that trio really kind of helped things on Saturday night, and presumably in a ballroom at the Santa Clara Marriott, which is their team hotel. And so they came out, and the poor Bears just fired their head coach, and their heads are swimming as they come out to San Francisco. And they ran into a buzzsaw in the beginning of the game, and the game was over basically at halftime. So now the question is, can the 49ers keep that going against a really, really powerful Rams team on Thursday night? And will they get help from their division mates as far as losing games? And before we went on the air, you read off to me the Seahawks' upcoming opponents, Green Bay, Minnesota, these same Bears, and then they end with the LA Rams, with the 49ers, of course, ending with the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, the Bears game, you know, we can now.
You know, I think we put that in a certain one of the two categories. I feel pretty strongly about.
But those other three, Green Bay, Minnesota, LA Rams, those are tough outs for the Seahawks. And I think we can both agree that the Seahawks are not an elite team. All these NFC teams, NFC West teams, are sort of kind of versions of the same caliber team. So, I mean, to me, it just makes it a little bit more interesting down the home stretch.
No question. And 49ers went out. It's going to be very interesting. I don't think they're going to win out, but they can say that to themselves, and I understand it. But it's too, I mean, Shanahan even said it, goes, you know, whatever the result, I just wanted us to play tougher. Like, he's basically saying it. Like, it's not about getting to the playoffs and making a run. That is not where their mindset is, and it really can't be practically. It's just about getting to play better, play tough. They were embarrassed by the last two games, you know, at Green Bay, at Buffalo. I mean, I think we all understood what was going to go on there, but they did not really fight, right? They didn't fight in the Buffalo game.
No.
It was snow, it was whatever, but that was not a tough-minded performance by everybody, And even Purdy said, I'm, you know, talking about myself when I say this. You know, we all have to play at a different kind of level than they showed the last 2 weeks. And then Shanahan is still really bothered by the Seattle game. So it's really, it's a three games. They did not play terribly in the Seattle game, except for at the end. But he counts that as part of this funk because it started it. It got them into the Green Bay game, and that rolled into the Buffalo game. It's a three-game thing. And they just don't want to play like that. They just, like, you can lose a game. They don't want to play like that. And that's what they showed up with today. Right off the bat, the Bears were absolutely pathetic in the first half. Caleb Williams does not look very good. All these things. Second half, a little different, but by that point, the game was essentially over. But this is what you do. Like, you're going to say, oh, it's just the Bears. You and I know better. You know, like, it's a game. It's an NFL game. You could screw that up just as like you could do it to anybody. They did not screw it up. They never looked weak. They looked like they were just rolling. And Shanahan was kind of in his bag. He was doing all kinds of, now maybe it's easier if the Bears are doing weird stuff on defense, which they kind of were, but that inside screen to Kittle was very interesting. Something as Kittle said, they've only called twice in his career with the 49ers. Some other stuff, like just some misdirection that I'm not sure why the 49ers have not been doing more of throughout the season. I don't quite understand why it hasn't been as creative as we've seen Shanahan. He's clearly a creative coach, but maybe it was time to open up the book. Maybe some of the guys just, you know, kind of implied to Shanahan, let's do some, I don't know. Or maybe he just decided, or maybe some coach helped him on that. I don't know. But did you agree that it was a little more open Shanahan play calling?
Yeah, it was, but I don't think anybody's telling Shanahan what to do with his play calling. This is.
Barros, it was you. I think it was you. Right. Kyle, what the hell?
I wanted to cite something you said about him bringing up the Seattle game. And you know, if the 49ers do not make the playoffs, that's going to be the game that haunts Kyle Shanahan the rest of the season. And maybe even longer. You know, there are certain games that he thinks about. Remember that? That opener against the Detroit Lions, I think it was 2021, where they just were blowing the Lions out, and they took it out all their starters, and all of a sudden the Lions came roaring back, and they had to put Fred Warner and put those guys back in the game. That's the reason why, to this day, you know, Christian McCaffrey is still playing under 4 minutes of these games and things like that. So there are certain games that really bother him. And you could tell, I wasn't there for Shanahan, but I just read the transcript, and it did strike me that he brought that one up of all these, because there are several other losses like that this year, the Rams, the Cardinals.
It's because it was going into this really hard two-game stretch. I think he was like, we got to win this game. As we said, like we were saying it too, it's common sense. You have to put this one in your pocket because you're likely to lose your next two. And it might be not fun in those games. Like they might be blowouts, maybe not both, but they might be. And to lose that one, knowing you've got two more losses probably coming up ahead, I think was just a backbreaker. And we all felt it, like we all said it. But he's saying it now. He's the way he talked on Friday, right? When, you know, I asked him about just the mood of the team and the way, you know, being written off, and you know, do you want to be in denial? Do you want to? Well, what's your mood? And he just talked this whole long, very good, typical Kyle Shanahan answer about how, like, he knew the schedule when it was going to get tough. It was right here. And, well, the last two, not this one. And he wanted to be, you know, 8-2, getting to that point. And instead, they were 5-5. So three division losses we've brought up ad nauseum. But the one right before it, I think, was the last hope. Like, just get that one.
Yeah.
And you're 6-4. You're 6-4 at that point. You lose both games. You're 6-6. You get lucky. You feel better. You're 7-5. And you're in the playoffs, essentially. And they didn't do that. And I think that really broke his heart and kind of, you know, put a hole in this entire season for the 49ers. But they had been building to that point anyway. Like, you know, there was like, we can name several losses that they shouldn't have had. But you're right. He brought up the Seattle thing very pointedly. I've heard him do it at other times. Like, that Seattle game was the start of when they lost the season for good. And it's going to be important to remember that. One game just can be the hinge point of so much in the NFL when so many teams are grouped together and are similarly talented and play each other. And you need to win that game. you absolutely need to win that game. And if you don't, you can't really cry about where you are position wise. But I see the future here a little bit, Barros. Like you're seeing Juwan Jennings he's wide receiver one. Right. I mean, there's no question about it. Like,
he's the top receiver.
And, you know, we'll see what happens when IU comes back next season. But Juwan Jennings is the guy. Deebo Samuel is not. That is not happening anymore. Even when Purdy, not that he means to make judgments when he says this, but he's like, yeah, when you kind of throw it up to JJ and George, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
He did not say Deebo. Because why would he? This hasn't worked with Deebo. But you got Jennings, you've got Lenore, you've got Pooney. I like what, you know, Jalen Moore's doing at left tackle. You had Barch before he got hurt today. You got, you know, Isaac Arendo, who got hurt today. But, like, there's something there. Like, you're beginning to see things. And I think that's what kind of Shanahan's gesturing towards. Like, they're seeing another generation come up. And they absolutely need this generation. Even Warner, he's a leader of this team. He's not an old guy. He's saying, you know, when they really need them, these guys are now showing up again. And a little bit late, but early for these guys' careers. Like, a lot of these guys were not expected to play like this at this point. I just think that's a smart way to point this season. I would, you know, it's things I've been writing about. Same thing, like, don't throw away this season, but build to next season. And I think that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, they will have something to rest their laurels on, which is that a lot of young guys got a lot of quality playing time. You know, we talked about the draft class. I mean, Evan Anderson, had another good game. I mean,
guys, if you want to know what it's like to watch a game sitting next to Matt Barros, well, every time Evan Anderson does, when a
defensive tackle makes a tackle at the sideline. That jumps out to me, no matter who it is. And then he's got this.
He stands out.
This big helmet with the extra padding. So it really stands out. And, you know, he's an undrafted rookie. I just think it's a really good story.
No, he's getting
tons of quality snaps right now. Your guy, I'll give you your praise. Malik Mustafa continues to play well to the point where Talanoa Hufanga comes back today. And then comes back into the starting lineup, and you figure, he goes in. The rookie's got to go out, right? That's just the law of the land in the NFL. Well, no, it was Jair Brown who left the starting lineup. So the starting safety duo is now Malik Mustafa and Talanoa Hufanga. Talanoa Hufanga being a free agent at the end of the season, so it probably will be Brown and Mustafa again to begin next year, but. I thought that was very interesting and really a comment on Mustafa and a comment on Brown, who did not have a very good game in Buffalo. Of all the missed tackles, his missed tackle on James Cook on that 65-yarder really kind of stands out. Just was not where he should have been, and that's his job. He's the safety.
I thought they might rotate Mustafa and Brown.
Like, and they did a little bit.
Not that much.
At the end, I think that was a pitch count issue for Hufanga because he was coming back. And so he started to come out of the game in the second half and Brown went in for him. But Mustafa stayed in, except for that one point where he got dinged up a little bit and came out for one snap. But, he looks good. A lot of young guys look good. A lot of
Renardo Green, you know, another one. You know, that he's just surviving out there. As a rookie is a very interesting thing to note. So Lenore and Green and, Mustafa and Brown, like there's your secondary in 2025, 2026. You can just see some of these things. I don't know that Hufanga is for sure gone. He might be cheap. Right? He's played how many games in the last 2 years? They love him.
He plays safety too.
He plays safety. And that's not a big market, obviously. And they played better with Hufanga. It's the ridiculous Bears. But they got weapons. They got Odunze, and they got DJ Moore, and Caleb Williams can fling it. I thought they played tight. I thought they were really tight on defense. And I think Hufanga probably has a lot to do. You keep telling me, and I totally get it, that he communicates. He's one of their best communicators. They're just more together. The rotations are right when they have somebody like that behind everybody. Well, he's actually playing strong safety, but in that back line, Warner kind of in the middle and Hufanga in the back. they just feel like the 49ers again. Again, we'll see what happens with the Rams on Thursday. Tough game, tough turnaround, but tougher for the Rams because they have to travel. And Greenlaw. Dre Greenlaw is going to interest me too, because maybe he's back Thursday and we know what he can mean to a defense. We don't know what he'll be like. You know, it's torn Achilles. That's a major injury. But that also means maybe he doesn't get a big, you know, offer anywhere else, and maybe he comes back. Like, you might see Hufanga and or Greenlaw back just because they're not going to make the big money that's going to cost the 49ers a lot. I'm just kind of curious to see how that looks. I think it'll be different if Greenlaw is anywhere close to what he was, in the middle of last season. Then you begin to kind of see how this works. You can see the pieces come together. One of the reasons I think that Nick Sorensen has a real chance to stay. I don't think it's the betting odds, because we know Jeff Ulbrich is likely going to be out there if Robert Saleh wants it. We've gone through all the names. But I think there's a strong sentiment that Nick Sorensen hasn't gotten a real, real solid chance to show what he could be up against the D'Amico Ryans, up against, you know, the Robert Saleh defenses, because he just hasn't had that personnel. And if you start writing in some of the names we're writing in, it's a different kind of 49ers. It isn't the same guys exactly, some of them, but not too many of them. Really just Warner, possibly Greenlaw, Hufanga, and Bosa from like 19, 20, 21. But maybe he hasn't had a whole shot. Maybe he would call great defenses. I don't know. I think I'm beginning to think there is a more, you know, at least 50-50 shot that Sorensen's back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know if Saleh is eager to come back here. I don't think there's any bad blood, but, following the 2018 season, which was his roughest season, Shanahan kept him, but he changed up his defense on him, kind of forced that change to the wide nine, and Chris Kocurek became basically the most important coach on defense. And I think that, if you're a defensive coordinator, you don't like somebody meddling with your shop. And that's what happened to the 49ers. And by the way, Shanahan was right. I mean, the 2019 defense was really good. It was the right fit for that group that they brought in. And to me, they've been chasing 2019 for the last five seasons. And they seem to get a little further away from it every year. So I don't know if Shanahan will see it that way. Probably not. If anything, he's stubborn. So he would want to stick with the same formula, which would mean Sorensen or Ulbrich or something like that. So, yeah, to me, it's either it's Sorensen or Ulbrich.
Yeah, I don't think it's Brandon Staley. I'll put it that way.
I don't think it's Brandon Staley either. But those are the two. And as far as Hufanga and Greenlaw, I mean, very easy to see them deciding that their best option is a one-year deal with the 49ers. You get to play a full season before your free agency. You get to hit free agency still in your mid-20s, maybe late 20s for Dre Greenlaw, and you make your money. You make a bigger chunk next year. I think probably Hufanga is more in that boat than Greenlaw is. Greenlaw has a nice track record behind him and should get some attention. Certainly, D'Amico Ryans knows how good he is. Some other coaches out there have seen all that. You said something really interesting during the game, and it kind of was striking me at the same time. I thought Garendo played really well. Garendo is a receiving threat. Garendo gets hurt a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you go into next season, Jordan Mason is a restricted free agent. Maybe he comes back. Maybe he doesn't. Is a 1-2 combination of Christian McCaffrey and Garendo enough for you, or should you take advantage of this very deep kind of rarity these days, a deep running back type of draft, and bring in, another guy, maybe a Christian McCaffrey successor, maybe somebody who could work with Garendo? I don't think anybody expects Guerrero to be a 17-game starter in the future. He hasn't done that ever in his career. So, is running back sort of a dark horse position for the 49ers early in this upcoming draft?
Yeah, I mean, that's when I first started thinking about it, when I'm kind of looking at these mock drafts and right where the 49ers are scheduled to pick, 15, 16. Guess whose name pops up?
Yes.
Ashton Jeanty. Now, that is not a thing that a Kyle Shanahan, anybody named Shanahan, is not allowed to take a running back in the first round. Remember that. Yeah. You're not allowed to say that. You always have to say Terrence Davis was a six-round pick. You always have to say Mike Anderson was undrafted. You have to say that. But, man, Ashton Jeanty would, you know, I was telling you this. To me, he sort of reminds me of a young Deebo Samuel that kind of just accelerate and then bounce off of people and keep going. The kind of stuff we're not seeing Deebo now.
Yeah.
Like he's getting hit and stopping. And that just happens sometimes. Maybe he's just hasn't been in that position. He's returned well, but he hasn't gotten, you know, as long as run this year is 12 yards. It's just amazing to think that. And maybe he has 100 yards rushing this season, maybe. And he's got a few big receptions, but not that many, and not for a while. Jeanty would come in. You go McCaffrey for another year or two, Jeanty and Guerrero, and then Jeanty takes over, and you have Jeanty and Guerrero. Woo! You have to say, how's Jeanty as a pass receiver? How is he in blitz pickup? All those things, I don't know. But, man, that would be interesting. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. They're going to take a running back in the third round, Barrows. You know that. They're going to take.
And they probably get a good one in the third round.
I don't know.
They would.
Yeah. But, you know, they could. I think they should take a tackle. They could take a pass rusher. That's what you always say. They could take a wide receiver. But, man, just looking at that, if they're sitting there at 16 or 17 and Jeanty's still there, I would have a pause if I was them. I would have to think about it.
I think the Cowboys fans would have apoplexy if the 49ers swipe Jeanty from them at some point in this draft, or if they drafted somebody other than a running back in the first round.
Yeah, you don't want to get, just recency bias, but man, Saquon Barkley has meant just a little bit to the Philadelphia Eagles. Derrick Henry's meant just a little bit to the Baltimore Ravens. That doesn't mean you have to do it. It would have to be a singular talent. But, they paid, a 2, 3, and a 5 for the trade for Christian McCaffrey. I don't know that Jeanty's as good as McCaffrey. I don't know if he's as versatile as McCaffrey. But, there is some history of valuing the running back. He's just got to be a really, really good running back. And maybe this whole thing of, you don't draft running backs high, and that's what gets them a running back who would be worth a 10th pick or 11th pick, and you get him at 17. Interesting thinking. We got a long way to go on this, but – man, that might be worth a column or two. That could be their quarterback kind of issue. Like, is it Ashton Jeanty? That's just kind of a way into the first round to discuss what their position could be.
Well, we saw the Detroit Lions do that a couple of years ago. They already had a really good running back in Montgomery, and they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round, and that was questioned ad nauseum. Seems to be working out for them.
That was like six, right? They took them.
Yeah, it was early. Yeah, it was early. I mean, the NFL is cyclical. I mean, running backs were not a big deal just a few years ago at all. I mean, talk about lagging in free agency. It's still happening. With teams not jumping on, some of these guys that are available, Derrick Henry, for example, not as much as you would think given their pedigree, but maybe, it's starting to circle around again where you're seeing, as you noted, Saquon Barkley, you're seeing the Lions, you're seeing what the 49ers did last year, and that, you also have this really deep draft in quality running backs. And so, we may be back to the 1980s again where it's all run heavy and then wide receivers start taking a back seat. Back to the good old days where you ran the ball 35 times a game.
I don't think that's going to happen.
John Riggins, he's going to make a comeback.
Yeah, John Riggins. Gerald Riggs, that was my NFC East running back when I was there. Let's talk about Brock Purdy, the quarterback. Really off game in Buffalo, but again, understandable given the conditions, but hadn't been great for a while. Tampa Bay was his last really solid game. And he just lights it up today. Lights it up. I mean, I think it goes hand in hand with Shanahan really getting into a rhythm. Then that play action was just devastating against Chicago. But Purdy looked so good. Under control, moving around, making the throw, throwing the ball deep. Missed Pearsall the one time. I mean, a little misread of where Pearsall was going to be. But, man, I thought he looked good. But this is the guy we know, right? If he has a bad game, he's not going to have, like, two of them in a row. If he has a mediocre game, he's probably going to have a good one. If he has a really good one, he might have another really good one. I just think the baseline is what we're seeing. This is a baseline Purdy season, and that baseline is pretty good.
Yeah, it's not as good as last year, but it's still really good. They started out this game, you and I were tracking it. He was under center that whole first drive and the whole second drive too, really. I feel like they've been in shotgun too much and they've gotten away from what makes them good. Interesting that they were under center and doing play action in the one game that the rookie tailback starts, but it seemed to work for them. And as you noted, that got Shanahan into a rhythm, and he began to do things that Shanahan does. And he hasn't been in that rhythm for a while. I think the Aiyuk injury, when we, you know, do the final autopsy on this season, that's going to be a huge component in all this. Maybe the biggest.
Well, McCaffrey. I'd say McCaffrey being out for the first eight
games. Yeah, that it is. But as far as the passing game goes, Aiyuk was never Aiyuk, and then he was gone after week seven. And, everyone had to adjust. Defenses certainly seized on it and changed how they played the 49ers. And that's probably a combination of no McCaffrey and no Aiyuk. But it's taken the 49ers a while to adjust, and to their credit, they did it today. I don't know how much man defense the Bears played. If they were playing zone, that really worked to the 49ers' favor. But, to his credit, Brock Purdy handled it well, and, he had them chanting his name at one point after he came in after a rough hit and came back in. I thought that was really interesting in a season in which, the 49ers are evaluating Purdy and deciding how much money they're going to pay him in the future. He's become a favorite here in San Francisco.
You might read a column bringing up some of these things later in the week. In the San Francisco Standard, by the way, Matt Barris, that's where you might read it. We shall see. Lots of things going on, but I have that one in the works. It's a very interesting time. And, as Dave Lombardi, my colleague, said, the talks can start as soon as the season ends, the day. And there's going to be a lot of interest on the 49ers side in making sure this does not go into August. Like, they cannot have anything go into August. This should not go into April. And I would think Purdy would be motivated by that. Obviously, the dollars are going to determine this. And I think the 49ers are going to be extremely motivated to get an understanding of where this is going to go by March and have it maybe done by early March, maybe even before the league year starts, just because of what they went through obviously with Brandon Aiyuk's contract, which negotiation was one of the roughest they've been around in a while.
I think that you should go to the season finale in Arizona because Jed York could just pull Purdy aside into a side room and just give him the check right there.
There it is. We're done.
That would save us all a lot of anguish, and certainly the 49ers, and it'd probably save them a lot of money, too, if they get the
– That's why Purdy's not going to do it then. You have to negotiate some. You're a starting quarterback in the NFL, possibly the top 10. You can't just do it on the 49ers' terms. I don't think his agent would allow that, and he would be right. And like Jimmy, I think Garoppolo signed his extension in February. It was fast. Oh, yeah. It was really fast.
He was number one. He was number one in the league for like 6 hours. And then he was number 11 after that.
I expect this to be a February, at least they're going to know by February and then, deal with the consequences if it's not happening. I just can't. It would be hard for me to see this getting beyond February, March, and it be getting bitter. I just don't see that. He's too good. He fits Shanahan too much. And they like Shanahan. They like Purdy. Why would you make this a messy thing if he's, if he's amenable to a certain reasonable number? And I think you can do it. The numbers are so high for quarterbacks which obviously can make it tougher. I think it might make it easier in one way. It's so high that taking the 15th highest salary is actually very good. It's like $48 million, right, a year. Like, if you compromise to 48, that's not bad. Like, I would compromise to $48 million, frankly, myself, and $170 million guaranteed instead of $190. Oh, my God, how terrible that is. I get it's negotiations. You're worth what you're worth. I'm not belittling the value of negotiating. You get what you get. Every dollar you make, you've earned. But it wouldn't be that hard to compromise and not go for number one. You could take, you know, I keep saying it, you could take Jalen Hurts' number. He did not try to break the bank 2 years ago, and he's happy at $51 million. What's the problem there for Purdy? You know, do you really want to make 60, 62? I don't know. Dak Prescott's got that on his head right now. He's the $60 million quarterback. You got to play like that, you know? Quarterbacks are valued tough. You know, they're going to be judged. We know how they're judged, by winning a Super Bowl, no matter what. But I think there's room here. We shall see. But hopefully we'll write about that. Unless, you know, Buster Posey signs like eight more guys at the winter meetings, and that's entirely possible. Barros, you got anything else you want to bring about this game?
Only that John Lynch talks to the media, I think, on February 26 in Indianapolis. So, judging from what you just said, you expect this deal to be
completed. Well, I'm going to go back and look to see when Jimmy signed. It was fast.
Yeah, it was mid-February. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fast.
After a season in which they didn't come close to making the playoffs, so they had plenty of time to work on it. I did have an exclusive that I'm willing to break right here on the TK show on the 49ers plus minus. I ran into Nick Bosa coming out of the locker room, and I said, you know, was this a case where you're going to play one game this week and you basically had to choose which game to play? And he said, no, that wasn't the case at all. He wasn't ready for today's game. Remains to be seen whether he'll be ready for the Thursday game against the Rams. So I was thinking that might have been what was happening, that they were saving him for the Rams game, knowing that if he played against the Bears, he probably would have been too sore to play 4 days later against the Rams. But that's not the case. So I don't know. Up in the air as to whether he plays against Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing for Trent Williams. You know, it just, these are tough injuries. It's a tough time. But if they had, I'll just say my thinking was if either one of them played today, they were not going to play Thursday.
Yeah.
So it gives them the shot to play Thursday. You know, Garendo, maybe not. Like, you know, that's the thing. You get a minor injury on Sunday, it's very tough to turn around to play Thursday. And just a minor one. Like Purdy, I think, like if Purdy had not come back into that game, for either time he banged himself up, get hit in the head, and then he hit his hand, looked like, on a defender, and he had not come back in, I was like, he probably not going to play Thursday. But he went back in, seems fine, so I would imagine he'll play Thursday. And then we'll see. Well, if they lose Thursday, which they really could, then we really might start seeing a shutdown.
Yeah.
That's when Fred Warner might, you know, like there's some names you can mention who've been playing a little banged up. That's when things might get much more amenable in the locker room to making sure some guys don't make it worse as they go in. And make sure they have a healthy offseason. You keep mentioning, and it's smart, healthy offseason, long offseason where you can participate in everything, where you can prepare yourself, not in rehab, but in practice, in reps, in just thinking about the season instead of your health, is a large bit of, I think, their thinking going into 2025.
You want to get your surgeries done in, you know, January, February, not March, April, May, because it all has a resulting effect on everything else.
Yep. All right, Barros, there we go. We banged it out. 38 minutes of prime entertainment from 49ers plus minus. There you go. We will not have another show this week with a game on Thursday, but we'll have a show Friday.
Yeah, we will.
It will be this week. I'm not even thinking about that. And then on and on throughout this fascinating season. I'll come up with another interesting draft candidate maybe the next time we do this. It's pretty good. Genty's pretty good, though.
I don't know if you can improve on Genty. That's gonna get the fan base rolling. People are gonna be talking about Genty for until April 25th.
Now you're making me think I should just write it just to make sure I can say I was the first because
get that Genty. You want the SEO search out there with your name on it.
Well, I'll probably do it right before. Well, I don't know. We got plenty of time. All right, Barros, that's the show for today.